Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives, from the New European. Isabel Eberhardt, 17th of February 1877 to the 21st of October 1904. Her fantasies knew no bounds, a former neighbour recalled of Isabel Eberhardt's Geneva childhood. Untamed, unfettered, she did whatever took her fancy, from morning to night. Ultimately, the only suitable refuge for those fantasies would prove to be the boundless, untamed, unfettered Sahara Desert. The vast shifting dunes and enormous star-filled night skies would be where the writer and traveller came closest to fulfilling the burning quest behind her short life, finding where she belonged and why. More and more my boredom and discontentment with people and things are increasing, she wrote in 1902 at the age of 25. Discontentment with myself as well, for I have been unable to discover a modus vivendi, and fear that with my character none is possible. If Isabel Eberhardt had been born a century later, it's likely she'd have been a rock star, a keen drug user, enthusiastic boozer, and cross-dresser who cheerily eschewed monogamy. Eberhardt immersed herself in mysticism, persistently rubbed authority up the wrong way, and spent most of her life thumbing her nose at convention. She even died at the customary rock star age of 27. Eberhardt is remembered primarily as a writer and explorer, but even the terms feel a bit reductive. She was a pioneer, an enigma, an exception, a singular woman ahead of her time and out of her time. In the colonial North Africa of the turn of the 20th century, she appeared preternatural. Her fascination with the lands and culture of the Maghreb began with her teenage reading in Switzerland. Her brother Augustine had joined the Foreign Legion, and Eberhardt would demand letters from him, filled with details of desert life. She also devoured Romance of a Spahi by the French naval officer and novelist Pierre Loti about the life and adventures of an Algerian cavalryman in the deserts of North Africa. This itinerant romantic horseman personified the physical and spiritual freedom that she craved. It gave Eberhardt her first inkling of the purity to be found in a desert landscape, where borders were chimerical and people were constantly on the move. Whatever truth she was seeking, it lay somewhere between the shifting sands and the sparkling canopy of the Sahara night. The vagrant owns the whole vast earth that ends only at the non-existent horizon, she wrote, and his empire is an intangible one, for his domination and enjoyment of it are things of the spirit. Eberhardt first set foot in Algeria on a visit with her mother in 1897. The two women were supposed to be the advance party of a vague plan to relocate the family home from Geneva, but the sudden death of her mother 6 months after their arrival threw an already rootless life into yet more disarray. Eberhardt was devastated. When her father, Alexander Trofimovsky, arrived for the funeral, he found his daughter distraught, wailing at him that she wanted to die. He took out his revolver, laid it on the table between them, and gestured that she should make use of it. When she left the weapon untouched, Trofimovsky insisted she accompany him back to Switzerland. Eberhardt went reluctantly. The Villa Nerve in Geneva, where she grew up, represented everything she was desperate to escape. Rootlessness seemed to be in her genes. Her mother was a Russian noblewoman, first married to an elderly general in the army of Tsar Alexander II, before she ran away with Trofimovsky, a defrocked Orthodox priest turned anarchist from Armenia who was tutoring her children. When Isabel was born in 1877, she became the youngest of five, and was given her mother's maiden name of Eberhard. No father was registered on her birth certificate. It was almost certainly Trofimovsky, although rumours persist to this day that her father was the French poet and restless libertine Arthur Rimbaud, who certainly met Isabel's mother in Geneva a few months before she was born. Educated at home by Trofimovsky, Eberhard absorbed literature and became fluent in six languages, including Arabic. Trofimovsky's nihilism was a huge influence on his daughter. The gesture with the revolver was no wry bluff designed to dampen histrionics. She would always believe that fate, rather than her own will, dictated her life. No one ever lived more from day to day, or was more dependent upon chance, she wrote. It's the inescapable chain of events that has brought me to this point, rather than I who have caused these things to happen. When Trofimovsky died in 1899, it cut any final ties Eberhard had to Europe, and she made for the desert again. Lacking an inheritance through illegitimacy, she posed as a man and worked in the Marseille docks until she could afford her passage. On arrival in North Africa, she settled in the coastal town of Berm, adopted local male dress, and identified as a Muslim student by the name of C. Mahmoud Esadi. When she was young, Eberhard had been encouraged by her father to wear her hair cropped and dress in boys' clothes. In North Africa, she found it even more liberating. As a Muslim woman, she would have kept her head covered and never gone out unaccompanied, anathema to such an independent spirit. The local Arab population was intrigued by the young European woman acting like a man and speaking perfect Arabic. The French colonials were scandalized by what they saw as Eberhard's dissolute lifestyle. She drank openly and to excess, smoked a strong local strain of hashish called kef, took numerous lovers, visited brothels, and chose to live in an Arabic part of Boehm rather than the French enclave. She even cohabited openly with an Algerian soldier named Slimane Aini. As if she wasn't already drawing enough attention to herself, Eberhard began to write impassioned articles for French-language newspapers about the injustices of colonialism. She became associated with the Qadiriyya sect of Sufism, whose followers vehemently opposed French rule. It was during a meeting of the Qadiriyya early in 1901 that an attempt was made on her life. A man burst into the courtyard where the group sat and slashed at Eberhard with a sabre. The first blow was deflected by a wire clothesline, which probably saved her life. The man was subdued, but Eberhard was badly injured nonetheless, almost losing an arm. The assassin claimed that Allah had sent him. Eberhard, possibly with some justification, suspected the French authorities. When she'd recovered and argued for leniency at her assailant's trial, Eberhard was expelled from Algeria by the French administration. Aini joined her in Marseille, where they married, and as the wife of an Algerian citizen, the French could not prevent her returning to the country to live. Eberhard began reporting for the Al-Akhbar newspaper, who also published her short stories and serialized her only novel, Trimardeur. Early in 1904, she was dispatched to the Algerian border with Morocco to cover skirmishes there. She fell ill with malaria, and on top of what was probably syphilis and the general ravages of her lifestyle, her teeth fell out and she lost most of her hair. After a spell in a military hospital, she was reunited with Aini, from whom she had briefly separated, and the pair moved into a small clay house. On their first night in their new home, the 21st of October 1904, melted snow and ice from the mountains engulfed their town in a catastrophic flash flood. When the waters had subsided, Eberhard's body was found under the collapsed staircase. Her journals and manuscripts were discovered sealed in an urn, damaged but mostly legible. Victor Baron, the editor of Al-Akhbar, found them, and saw to it they were published in the years following her death. I think it is impossible for human minds to think of death as a final, irrevocable end to life, she'd written. Thanks to Baron, her words at least would survive her. Vivid portrayals of desert life, and accounts of people and places no European had ever described before. She also lives on through the streets named after her, in Geneva, the Algerian town of Béchar, and in Algiers itself. The latter in particular a rare honour, as nearly all other French place and street names were swiftly changed after independence. In fact, there is no more fitting tribute to Isabel Eberhard than a road bearing her name. "Life on the open road is liberty," she'd written. "Liberty to be alone, to have few needs, to be unknown, to be everywhere both a foreigner and at home, and to walk grandly, in solitude, in conquest of the world." Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.